Let's call Martha Peck up, and Martha's going to give her Carolina story.
Okay. So, good morning, everyone. And if you need to stand up and stretch, I don't blame you. That's okay. Last May, I celebrated my 50th reunion at Carolina. So, I've had more than a few years to live my Carolina story. And the challenge is going to be to tell it in just a few minutes, which I'll try, with a little bit of humor and a serious note. So, I want you to join me in visualizing this recurring daydream that I have. We're all sitting in the Dean Dome. It's the beginning of a basketball game, and the Jumbotron starts streaming a video. Not of former players and coaches, but to my surprise, it's me, and this is what's showing. 14 years at Carolina and 3 degrees. Seven years at the School of Pharmacy, ranked 1 in the nation. Four years in medical school, ranked 5th in primary care. Three years in residency, ranked 3rd in family medicine. One, there's only one place for me, and I'm Martha Peck, and I'm proud to be a Tar Heel. Now, some might think that 3 degrees and 14 years at a single institution is a bit excessive, but what can I say? I love this place. Carolina's been the source of tangible things, career, mentors, friends, life preparation, and intangible experiences, confidence, state of mind. My story starts in Greensboro in 1951, the only child of two parents, restaurant manager, and a nurse. I first came to Carolina in the 8th grade with a school group. It was spring, and I was enthralled with the campus and Franklin Street. I fell in love and confidently announced I was going to Carolina. Now, in late 1960s, the freshman class at Carolina was predominantly male, and my guidance counselor dissuaded me from even applying. But undeterred, I submitted a single application to UNC for early admission, and thank goodness I was accepted. I had a zilch fallback option. So being an undergraduate in the early 70s was a time of immense political and societal change, and this really had a profound effect on my experience. Think about the Vietnam War, student protest, the passage of Title IX, Roe v. Wade, the end of required curfews for women, and approval of dorm visitation by men, and Spring Jubilee in Kenan Stadium. And did I mention there was a 7-to-1 male-female ratio? During my undergrad years, I met a group of 15 women who were to become lifelong friends, and we still meet every few years. I also met my husband, Ray, during freshman year. He asked me out. I couldn't go out that night, so he waited 4 more years before he asked me out again. This time, I accepted. I'll share one funny and, frankly, embarrassing experience I had freshman year, but shows my prior sort of sheltered existence. Back then, we had no room phone, no cell phones, just a single phone on the hall that I happened to answer late one night. "Hello, this is Spencer Dorm," a male voice. "Are there any nymphomaniacs there?" "I don't know. Let me check." So my roommate was as clueless as I was. We got out the dictionary, found the unknown word. I quickly returned to the caller. "No, my dorm doesn't have those kind of girls." Now, pharmacy was a rigorous 5-year degree, and I spent most of my afternoons in the lab compounding assorted products, tablets, creams, even suppositories. I was pretty studious and liked to scout out quiet places to study. One haunt was the Wilson Library, where I discovered an unlocked window that allowed a serendipitous escape for study breaks. Today, clinical pharmacy is a well-recognized profession, but in the 70s, it was a fairly new concept. I knew I wanted close interactions with patients and physicians, probably in a hospital and not the local drugstore. So after graduation, I worked at a small hospital in Tarboro, trying to deliver my own brand of pharmacy services. I soon realized that I needed more training to become the practitioner I envisioned, so I returned to UNC for a master's. But to prepare for the rigors of grad school, and much to my parents' chagrin, I spent a winter in Vermont as a waitress at the Trapp Family Lodge, think Maria and the Sound of Music, and was a ski bum. Grad school afforded some unique opportunities, and I'll share just two. One was a research project at a local clinic. My goal was to help patients take their medications correctly. So I recall the man who came in carrying an alarm clock that he set to go off at 7, 8, 9 a.m., and then repeated it every evening. Why? He had heard about the dangers of drug-drug interactions and falsely believed he couldn't take his medications together. Then there was the mother who was treating her toddler's ear infection by putting the liquid antibiotic into his ear instead of giving it orally. I kid you not. My study showed that pharmacists' involvement in counseling and a visual reminder improved compliance. Another unique opportunity was spending a semester as the lone pharmacist working at three very, very remote clinics in the western part of the state. The med school airplane provided my weekly transport, and occasionally the pilot let me take over the controls under close supervision. I lived by myself in a shack in the middle of a cow pasture with water that often froze when the temperature dipped. A Cherokee medicine man even befriended me and taught me herbal medicine and took me cave exploring. Recognizing that this remote area was unlikely to attract a full-time pharmacist, I petitioned the NC board to allow nurse practitioners to dispense pre-packaged medications. This was accepted as a new model and expedited the delivery of much-needed meds. My mountain patients even taught me a new language. When someone says, "I'm percolating just fine," they mean they're doing pretty well. "Mama fell up and she's on the floor" means somebody has fainted. After finishing my master's, my intention was to provide pharmacy services at a local hospital, but opportunity knocked, and I always try to keep an open mind. My opportunity was to join the research division of a pharmaceutical company then known as Burroughs Wellcome. My job was conducting trials of investigational drugs, the critical work done before a drug can be submitted for FDA approval. Many of my pharmacy faculty chastised me for going over to the dark side, i.e. industry, when several of them ended up joining Burroughs Wellcome just a few years later. I worked in the neurology section, and I want you to envision this unexpected and scary scenario. Even now, I'm confident my UNC education prepared me to stay calm, think analytically, and stay focused. At that time, there were only 18 patients and three study sites in the entire world who were taking the study drug. I had just arrived, and I was talking to the neurologist, an acclaimed investigator. His phone rang. A patient had died unexpectedly. Was this related to the study medicine? There was an urgent need to inform the company, the other investigators, the patients, and the FDA. That very evening, I found myself in a frigid room observing an autopsy as the company's representative. Fortunately, the patient's death was not drug-related, and a version of this drug is still used widely. But it was an unexpected and scary experience for a 28-year-old. After a few years, I decided to leave research and return to my pharmacy roots as clinical pharmacy coordinator at Wake Medical Center. But about a year later, another unanticipated opportunity came knocking. This was when my former pharmaceutical company asked if I would be interested in the position of executive director of their corporate foundation, the Burroughs Wellcome Fund. Now, I didn't know a thing about philanthropy, except it meant giving money to worthy causes. And I'd never worked for a nonprofit or even overseen any grant programs. But here's my philosophy. While it's important to set goals, it's also crucial to keep an open mind to new opportunities that may be out of your comfort zone. One can always return to something, but that open door may not stay open very long. So I responded yes, had a series of interviews, and was fortunate to be offered the position at the ripe old age of 31. My predecessor was highly regarded and was retiring after directing the fund for over 30 years. Veronica, I know you can relate to this. I loved my position at the BW Fund, and I stayed there for almost 20 years. The job challenged me and provided unparalleled opportunities to work with renowned scientists, Nobel laureates, our grantees, who are all on the cutting edge of medical research. And along the way, the foundation received an additional $500 million, so there was an opportunity to become completely separate from our parent company and to build new headquarters in RTP. And working in philanthropy helped me realize how important it is to support organizations you care about, like UNC. In 1998, people thought I had lost my mind when I announced my retirement from the fund to pursue a medical degree. My own doctor asked, "Have you considered climbing Mount Everest? It'd be easier and cheaper." But to tell the truth, this was the fact. My desire for direct patient contact had never really abated, and I hoped that it wasn't too late at age 49 to pursue my long-held passion. And without a doubt, I wanted to be right here. I still count my blessings that they decided to take a chance on me. I recall my neurology professor kidding, "You know, we all start losing our brain cells in our late 20s. It's good you've retained a few." And at the same time, my son was also at Carolina, and he delighted in saying, "Mom, how'd you do on that exam? Mom, did you study as hard as you needed to?" So after finishing my residency in family medicine, I worked in private practice with another woman physician before we merged with UNC and she retired. I now work part-time with UNC Physicians Network at three local clinics. I just can't get away from UNC. In closing, my Carolina story brings three reflections. Carolina provided me an unrivaled education and the ability and the confidence to pursue unanticipated opportunities. Carolina connected me to faculty and lifelong friends who encouraged and supported me not only when I was in Chapel Hill, but beyond. And most importantly, Carolina introduced me to my husband, Ray, of 45 years, without whom I wouldn't have two wonderful sons and two grandchildren. So, my enduring connection to Carolina is ever in my heart and mind. I'm Martha Peck. I'm a Tar Heel born, I'm a Tar Heel bred, and when I die, crying no time soon, I'll be a Tar Heel dead. Thank you, and go Heels.